Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective as we're here halfway through the week on Wednesday night. I'm Dave Richmond along with my good friend Bubba from the LaGrange. Oh my God, Bubba from China Grove. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Dave. Yeah, definitely not from LaGrange, but excited to talk some East Carolina baseball among other things with a familiar guest.
No doubt, and great to have Matt Semenza. What's up, dude?
What's going on, fellas? It's always nice to see Bubba from LaGrange. who knew?
A tough day. But I had a big celebration today at work, and I'm glad to be on this side of it. Everything worked out great, but my mind is mush right now. But I tell you what, we're very excited, Bubba, to have our guest, and one that was a regular for many years on our show for about, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Huge series this weekend, taking on Tulane down in New Orleans, and obviously to preview that, was natural to have this guy back on, the director of broadcasting for the Green Wave, Corey Glore. Corey, how are you?
Doing well. Has it been 4 or 5 years since I've joined you from LaGrange?
you came on with us in 18, so
2018. Yeah, so this would be technically season number 5. That I've made an appearance on your show, the fifth baseball season, but this one I might be a one and done. I feel here for this baseball season.
All right. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what, and I will go ahead and say that I will not be making the trip. So Matt, Bubba, and I, we can go ahead and give us grief that we're not going to make New Orleans this weekend. So you can go ahead and give it to us right now. We'll go ahead and we'll take it like a man, or I will anyway. I don't know about the guys. But we'll take it right now. We're not coming to New Orleans this weekend.
This has been on the schedule for months, gentlemen, and none of you are going to be here. So, fine. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
Hey, believe me, I'd love to be in New Orleans this weekend. It should be a heck of a series. But, when you have kids that are fourth grade and second grade, they have spring sports going on. So, you got to – and keep your priorities straight, but
don't use your kids as an excuse, Bubba. don't throw your kids to the wolves like that.
Wow. Matt, can you help us out, man?
Listen, the only thing I'll say is that if you guys commit along with me, I will promise to make a trip to New Orleans next season. I'm 100% in, regardless of kids or anything.
Well, we will play host to you in football this fall, and I forget what date that is, but ECU comes to Tulane for football this
season. That is October the 8th.
Okay, so the weather should be beautiful by that point. And then basketball will likely be making a trip down here as well. Usually we do the home and home. So, yeah, you got two chances there for at least sports that I'm involved in. Of course, you got a whole bunch of others as well. But, football will be here in October the 8th, according to Bubba. So set your sights on that.
Nice. Definitely need to get back. The only time I've been to New Orleans was actually to watch East Carolina in the New Orleans Bowl against Louisiana Lafayette way back in 2012.
I actually went to the New Orleans Bowl this past year. I already forgot who won. No idea who played in that game, but I went to my first game in the Superdome ever. So I've never seen a Saints game there, but I've seen the New Orleans Bowl, and I saw a basketball game in the Superdome. I haven't seen a Saints game.
Yeah. And I tell you what, great city, great food, great music. You're talking about the Jazz Fest. That would be a great time. Of course, Mardi Gras. I mean, come on. That's like the ultimate. You know,
That was fun. Yeah.
Hey, Matt, let me ask you a question. I know the answer for Bubba. Bubba would say no. Would Chrissy let you go with us during Mardi Gras?
Oof. That might be a tough sell. I mean, she's great. You know, she kind of lets me do my thing, but that might be Mardi Gras. I don't know, man. I don't know if I can pull that one off. That might take a miracle.
All right. We got time to work on that one. Let's talk about but before we get Matt in more trouble. Oh, there's Ben Byram, ladies and gentlemen. Ben, what's up, brother?
I'll see if I can talk to Ben microphone to microphone at some point this weekend before a game starts. See if I can snag the headset away from Scooter for a couple of moments just to talk to Mr. Byram. I'm going to try and make that a point.
He's the man, no doubt. 94.3 The Game. They had a great interview with Raekwon Boyette today, the new receivers coach. So that was great. Great to have him in Greenville, where you see the newest coach for the Pirates. So let's talk, though. Right now, we're in baseball mode. I know. I guess the best way to start, tell everybody that here in Pirate Nation and beyond about Tulane baseball. How are things gone so far?
They've been good by and large, I would say. I mean, you got 23 wins, 24 wins on the season right now. It's either 24-13 or 23-14. Forgive me, because there's a game last night that we lost to Southern Miss, and time and space have kind of ceased to be for me here over the course of the year. So, I mean, they have been a good team, and it's been needed here. It's been good to see here. They were a good team last year as well, and then last weekend of the season is when they really just kind of fell off the earth at Cincinnati, and that helped ECU win a conference championship. But no, it has had some ups and downs, not necessarily, I think, the dramatic ups and downs that ECU has had. But it had right now it's a bit of a down. They've lost four of their last six heading into this series, and it has not been pretty on the mound here of late, but they had almost an entirely new pitching staff to figure out heading into this year. And for most of the season, they have really performed well. They're on a down stretch right now, and so they will need to bounce back starting Friday in order for that. But they have had some high moments already this year. The Louisiana Tech series win stands out. You know, taking two for Mississippi State, even though they've had a down year, was certainly a calling card for them. And then they went on a 5-game losing streak, but then ripped off 6 in a row in the win column. Another drop 4 of 6. So it's been tricky to kind of keep holding the thread right now for this team, but they've only lost one weekend on the season, or I should say 1 week of the season, I should say. This past weekend in Houston was just the second weekend they lost. And so they've been consistent in that regard, even if necessarily the performance on the field has been a little bit up and down.
What is the differences between, we know about New Orleans City with New Orleans versus Greenville, but what are the differences you've seen so far working for the Pirates and now working for Tulane?
You mean like in terms of kind of how the teams play, how the programs operate? What do you mean?
Programs operate, yeah. I mean, we know there are going to be differences with the...
You know, I haven't actually really thought about that much. I mean, Travis Jewett and Cliff Godwin have different temperaments to them, no question. Which is, it's interesting because those two are good friends. And you wouldn't know it when you watch these two play. These matchups are usually very intense and very vocal. And this now I'll see it from this side of things for the first time. Travis is a pretty laid back guy. Now he will get on you with the best of them. And I've seen it over the course of the year. And he's a very tenacious competitor. But he's very, he's more easygoing, and that's not a slight to Cliff. Cliff is a very intense, driven, focused head coach. It's just they're two separate personalities, I guess, is the biggest difference that I've noticed so far. The way that they're very similar in terms of how the coaching staffs kind of interact with the players. And I think this might just be just a general baseball thing now that I'm seeing it with a second program, but it's certainly notable just the level of, I think, care, the relationship building that exists with Tulane baseball between the staff and the players. And I saw it at ECU baseball as well. That's a very common theme that I've seen between these two, and that the coaches love the players love the coaches. Sometimes there's tough love, and certainly there was I saw that a lot in 6 years in Greenville. I've seen it a lot so far here in 1 year in New Orleans, but there is a genuine camaraderie that exists that starts from the top and works its way and filters down. I think there's a familial element here at Tulane that I saw a little bit of at ECU with, every game at ECU, you see the Palumbo kids running around after a game and how important they are to that clubhouse. And here, Travis's two sons are very much involved with the team. Tanner Jewett, the oldest one, kind of runs the equipment department here. Jay Ullman, the assistant coach, his two little boys are the bat boys for this team. Daniel Latham, the pitching coach, his son's always running around. There is a true family element to things here, and that's been similar to what I got in Greenville.
Now, Corey, you talk about, players and coaches, in that family atmosphere and, loving one another. But as you know, having seen it from the East Carolina perspective, and this weekend you're going to see it from the Tulane perspective, there's not much love lost between these two teams. And a lot of jawing back and forth. Obviously that's even more likely when you have such high stakes with the Pirates and Tulane first and second in the AAC standings. So just, talk about that aspect of things.
Well, this was the case last year too. These teams were 1-2 when they headed into the series at Clark LeClaire, and now it's the same exact thing. In fact, it's reversed because Tulane was sitting atop the league heading into the series last year, and now ECU is atop the league heading into the series this year. I asked Travis Jewett about it today. I do a weekly podcast myself now for the school here, and I have Travis on every week. And I asked him about this. I've seen it for 5 years, this matchup of how volatile it can get. What is it about this matchup that makes it that way? And Travis said very plainly, they have what we want. And so it's important for us to try and go out there and grab it. And that creates emotion. That creates a lot of fire. And it comes from a very natural respect that Travis has for Cliff and the job that he's done there. And frankly, these two programs have had plenty of players come through it that are not shy of jawing, that are not shy of making their thoughts well known vocally. And that's the case again with this Tulane team. I'm sure it's the case with East Carolina as well. And so when you have type A personalities colliding, you're going to get something that's pretty explosive, particularly when there's something on the line, which there is again here this year. These two have always been kind of battling at the top here, and East Carolina has won at these battles more often than not. And so that has created yet another flame for here, the Tulane Green Wave side of things, to go and grab it from this team. And I think East Carolina knows that that is the message heading in on this side of things. So there's no secrets. These two want the same exact thing, and they're usually battling for the same exact thing. And so that creates usually a weekend that is filled with drama.
Corey, before we really dive into this matchup, Craig Doucette chimes in on Facebook saying, what is one thing you miss about ECU and one thing you do not?
Well, what I've always said is, for me, my time at ECU, what made it so special were the people I got to know. Like it, the wins were one thing, and yes, ECU baseball gave me a lot of wins to call and three super regionals to call, and that is something that I got a perfect game to call out of it. Like it's things like that that I will take with me, you know, here at Tulane and however far I go, however long I do this. The people that I met there, I'm really excited to see a lot of these people come into town tomorrow. Like, you know, I saw Cliff a little bit when I was in town for basketball in early January. I snuck into the office and said hi, and some of the, you know, the Zach Womack, the trainer, and guys that I got to know for 6 years and became really close with. And, you know, Malcolm Gray is still one of my best friends in the world, and being able to see him for a couple of days coming up. I've known Scooter now for a while, and being able to see him, and that was everything for me at ECU. It was, you know, the successes on the field are one thing, but just getting to know the people in and around that program, getting to know some of the fans there, getting to know you guys through this medium here, that's what made my time there a true blast. What's something I don't miss about ECU? Goodness, I don't know if I want to answer that. Let's see. What's something
you may want to come back?
Yeah, what's something I don't miss about ECU?
Let's see. How can I say this without burning bridges?
Right. And there's frankly, there's nothing like that to burn here. You know, I'll be honest here. Here's one thing that always kind of stuck in my craw there. As much as I love calling games at Clark LeClaire, it's pointing the wrong direction. Like, I know it was the footprint of the old stadium, but it's pointing due west, and that means the sun's smack dab in my face for a 6:30 start, and it just, like, just flip it 90 degrees. That's all you needed to do. You had Doughty Ficklin as your backdrop, and that would have been beautiful, and I wouldn't have the sun gouging me in the eyes for most of those games. And so that, I don't miss that. Now, that does exist a little bit here at Turchin. We face northwest, not due west, and so the sun's a little bit in my eyes at the start of a 6:30 game. But it's not as blinding and horrifying as it is at Clark LeClaire.
Now, Corey, when the rendering for Clark LeClaire came out, 03, 04, whenever it was, you know, that was the original plan to rotate the ballpark. The plate was going to be in what is now the left field corner down toward the Pirate bullpen. And, for whatever reason, they opted to keep it the same. I don't know if there was a logistical reason why they did that, or if it was just, you know, for history's sake or what. But nonetheless, they obviously kept it the same. But I wasn't sure, you know, in all your chats with Coach O and other people within and around the program, if that ever came up.
I did. I think I just mentioned it offhand a few times that this ballpark's facing the wrong direction. Like, I did say that. As much as I like that park, and some special moments happened for me in that park, boy, it faces the wrong way. And so, and this park here is not as bad as that, but if it would have just turned 90 degrees, they rebuilt Turchin on the old Turchin here after Katrina damaged it, and they kept the footprint the same. If they did the same thing, rotated it 90 degrees to the left and put it where the left field corner is, then you have downtown New Orleans as your backdrop, and that would have been absolutely perfect. But still, they kept it historically where it was, and that means occasionally I have the sun beating down on my face here.
Corey, I'll go ahead and jump in with a question here. When you look at Tulane's lineup, who's the one guy that really kind of strikes fear, you know, from the East Carolina perspective? Who should we really be looking out for?
Guy right at the top, Matt, Ethan Groff, who is the conference's leading hitter, and it's by a pretty wide margin by this point. He's hitting 420-something heading into the weekend. This is a kid who is a redshirt sophomore. He battled injury in the COVID year, had a really down 2021, and this year is just a completely different animal. I mean, he's top 10 in the country in batting average right now. Everything he hits is hit hard. There is a very impressive, just calm confidence about how he conducts himself, and it's been needed here for this team, Matt, because some of the guys this team leaned on last year offensively were slow getting going out of the gate. Bennett Lee, Chase Engelhard, those are freshman All-American last year that took a lot of time to get going here this year. And so Groff at the top of the order has just been a monster. And he's homered in three straight games heading into this weekend. And so it's without him, Tulane is in a very different spot right now, offensively and just record-wise. He beat Mississippi State in a walk-off home run in game two of that series. He has almost single-handedly kept this offense afloat in certain games. And there's nothing that's not in his swing plane right now. It reminds me of what Connor Norby was doing last year. And just everything was hit hard, and everything was hit on the barrel, hitting it to all fields. Power, has speed, has it all. That's what Ethan Groff, I mean, he's a player of the year candidate right now. To me, he is the player of the year. And without him at the top of the order, then Tulane's in a very different spot right now.
Talk about the pitching. How's the pitching looking this year for the Green Wave?
You know, if you would ask me 2 weeks ago, I probably would be bring you a little bit more of a confident answer, but it has really struggled of late. The weekend in Houston was not this pitching staff's finest hour. They didn't get a quality start out of any of their three guys. Now, the three guys are throwing on a weekend, two true freshmen and a sophomore transfer who only threw 9 innings last year at Mississippi State. And so it's a completely different looking pitching staff from what Tulane had last year. That happens when you had 4 weekend starters and 3 of them got drafted. And so they knew this was going to be the case heading into the year, that this was going to look very different. Grant Siegel has taken the game one role here, a freshman from Fort Lauderdale. He is as diligent of a preparer as I've ever seen in my life for anybody of any age, let alone an 18-year-old. And he got knocked around by Houston last time out. Dylan Carmouche is the Mississippi State guy. He's a very, very impressive left-hander. He's got a ton in his arsenal. Will drop the arm to 3/4, go over the top. Great changeup. Kind of is when he's on, he commands everything. He wasn't quite on in Houston. He also got hit with a line drive off of his ankle in the first inning of that game. It just wasn't the same. And then Michael Massey has been the guy in the 3 spot in the Sunday game. He has been up and down as a freshman. Really good fastball as an Atlanta kid. Dealt with Tommy John in high school, but if the draft were more than 20 rounds, he probably is drafted. He was that level of talent coming out. The key with Massey has been he gets through a first time in a lineup pretty well. Second time through is a problem. And it was a huge issue against Houston where they just clubbed him at the second time around. And so those have been the 3 starters. They all need a response here after pitching down against Houston. And we'll see that there might be some shifting around in this rotation here, from what I've been hearing that hasn't been confirmed or anything yet. And then frankly, I mean, again, 2 weeks ago, this Tulane bullpen was looking pretty solid and locked down. And now it's kind of getting thinner and thinner as the week and a half has gone along here. The goal is to get to Zach DeVito to save a game. This is the best closer in the American right now. He's top 10 in the country in saves right now. When he is on for a save, it's pretty electric. The challenge has been getting it to him now here of late. And so I think Tulane is still kind of is back into trial mode right now on the mound, which is not exactly where you want to be at this time of year, but this is a pitching staff with 11 freshmen through it. And so they kind of thought maybe this was going to be occurring at some point, and it's occurring now.
And that was my question, is not about talent. It's more about experience, right, Corey, with the younger.
Yeah, it's, you know, Dylan Carmouche, he was on that Mississippi State team last year that won a title, but he only threw 9 innings. And so he's throwing more innings than he ever has in his life right now. Michael Massey, same thing, especially after being injured as a high school senior. And Grant Siegel started as a middle reliever, and now he has worked up to Friday night starter. And so, yeah, you're dealing with inexperienced pitchers that are now into the the dog days of April in a college baseball season, and wear and tear can naturally happen. This is part of the next evolution for these guys to become legitimate 1-2-3 power arms in a Division I college baseball rotation. They got the stuff, and they certainly have the confidence from my interactions with all three of them. Now it's about putting it into practice, and that's the next hurdle here for Daniel Latham, our pitching coach. And I mean, no time like right now, when you know you had a big game last night against Southern Miss, not able to win that one, and then you have this series coming up, which is going to be your biggest weekend of the year, frankly. Now's the time to try and put this back into place here, because time's going to be running thin here all of a sudden in the year once this weekend's over.
Corey, in addition to Ethan Groff, you know, tell us some more about that Green Wave lineup. I was able to watch bits and pieces of games 2 and 3 against Houston, when both teams combined, as you said, to score 20 runs. So obviously they're a lot more productive bats, and just, you know, how East Carolina likes to attack things from an offensive standpoint with the short game and a lot of fake bunts, so on and so forth. So, you know, how does Coach Jewett like to go about things offensively?
Yeah, and let me just say, this weekend I probably have less prep work to do than most weekends, which is nice. It's a nice lift off the shoulders here, because there are some different names, certainly on the East Carolina side, a couple of freshmen that are breaking through. Jenkins Coward's been great. But I kind of know what to expect from how this offense operates. And so that's been good. At Tulane, it does not get that, I guess, that fancy with the showing bunt and whatnot. They will do hit and run quite a bit. That they're not a big straight steal team. But they will put runners in motion for a hit and run. And that is how they try and move everyone around. This is the second best team in the nation at hitting doubles. They're in, I think it's 95 is the count right now. So everyone in this lineup can plug a gap and do it with some heat off the bat. It's, you know, behind Groff, Luis Aviles, who's a redshirt senior, he's struggling right now over the last couple of weeks. But he was on an absolute tear the last probably 3 weeks of March and then the start of April. I mean, everything he hit was just waylaid. And he's fighting it right now. Got banged up at Houston. And so he's been fighting injuries now. He's been huge in the two-hole of the lineup. And that's been a couple of freshmen in the middle of the order that have really elevated. And Tulane has needed them, because you have Jackson Lynn, who's outfielder, who is why I had to delay the start of this podcast. My apologies. I was talking to Jackson for my podcast. He was drafted out of high school from Boston. The Astros drafted him. He's from Boston. He reminds me a ton of Bryson Worrell and the early, like the freshman year Bryson Worrell, in which you knew he was talented and he needed to figure out that he was talented. Jackson Lynn's the second best hitter on this team, and it's all been within the last 3.5 weeks of the season. He's special, and he's not a switch hitter. That's the only difference that Bryson has on him. But Lynn is a big body outfielder with speed, with crazy power, and when he is really going well, he hits to all fields. Like, he is a five-tool guy. And when I told the coaches early on the season, like, he reminds me of a Bryson Worrell, and they're like, we will take that. Like, we will absolutely take that right here, right now. And so Jackson Lynn's a guy in the heart of the order to keep an eye on. Then Brady Margette right behind him has really come on of late the last 3 weeks. He's been terrific. Big left-hander from Milwaukee, now over at first base, driving the ball a lot here of late. And Tulane's needed that, because they don't have a ton of left-handed hitting in their lineup. And so, he's been a real nice lift since the calendar turned to April. Those are some of the names outside of Bennett Lee, Chase Engelhard. You know those names from last year. They're starting to get back into form. But a couple of the new guys, Lynn and Margette, they're worth keeping an eye on.
Transitioning over, and we've talked about the Green Waves pitching staff and some of the issues here of late. But obviously, East Carolina was dealt a significant blow onto, you know, and that's a significant understatement, when it lost Carson Wisenhunt, but still a very deep pitching staff. And you see You've seen so many different guys in that starting rotation. Who would have ever thought? Did you ever think you'd see Ryder Giles as a Friday night starter?
Listen, I'm ready to drop this story on Friday, 2 o'clock, when the game gets underway here, about how I remember vividly opening day of the 2019 season. Ryder's at third base, and suddenly he's on to close the game, and he didn't think he was going to pitch. His family didn't think he was going to pitch. They kind of shelved him being a two-way player. And then opening day of his first collegiate game, he's closing the game. And now he's the Friday starter. That's an unbelievable evolution here for Ryder. I mean, he is one of the funkiest pitchers I've ever seen, with how he delivers the stuff that he has. One of the nicest guys that I was around in my time with East Carolina. I'm looking forward to seeing him. His parents, I imagine, are going to be traveling here, Rick and Laura. I got to know them pretty well over the years, so hopefully they're in town. But yeah, Ryder as the Friday guy, that's awesome for him. And I know circumstances kind of put him in that spot, but he's taking advantage of it. He's pitching his tail off right now. And so that will be to kind of see the start of his career and now where things are right now for him. That's pretty amazing, and I'm thrilled for the kid.
Yeah, as you know, very unorthodox, delivery, and then just he's only running up there in the mid 80s or so, yeah. And I think you and others, talking about throwing a frisbee up there, but
the frisbee slider,
the old frisbee slider, but. Riders 4-0 with a 0.89 ERA. UCF did get some good swings off against him, but at the same time, still pitched pretty well. Was unlucky with some miscues and so forth in the field. But opponents are hitting just 177 against Ryder, and then behind Ryder, Jake Kuchmaner had to leave the game after a significant, rather a very good performance, but. Fortunately, from everything we're hearing, it is not a significant injury.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see, injury notwithstanding, Jake, I think, round back into closer to form as to what we saw in 2019 when he just kind of carved the world apart there as a sophomore. I mean, it's to see him kind of fall back into the successful pitcher that we all knew he was, is really cool to see. And he has worked his tail off to get back to this point. There were not many harder workers on that team than Jake Kuchmaner, and one of the more gregarious guys, extroverted guys on that team, always smiling even when he was struggling, always first out the dugout. Just talking about this now with you boys, I was at practice today, and our team here, is most of them are very well aware that I was at East Carolina the last 6 years, and so they were coming up to me and just like, so excited about this weekend, like, you excited to see some of these guys, excited to see some of your friends, what do you think? And now with that today and talking to you all right now, it's I think now starting to hit me what's about to happen here this weekend for me. I knew it was going to be weird. And now it's, talking about Giles and what he's become, talking about Kuchmaner and what he has turned back into here. Hopefully we get to see him this weekend. Boy, this is going to be something over the next couple of days here once this thing picks up Friday.
And that's the thing, Corey, because you've been at East Carolina, obviously, since 2016. So pretty much anybody that is still in the program, that is not a freshman, with the exception of somebody like Ben Terwilliger, who transferred in, the majority of these guys on this roster, you have fairly significant relationships with and gotten to know them over the last several years. So it's not like some of our play-by-play voices in the past where they were there a year or two and then out the door.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I was around when so many of these guys started, and now to see them be what they are and turn into the team that I think everyone in the league knew that they could be here over the last 2 weeks. You know, it's I can't say it makes me happy because of what I do now for a living. But it, for me, it goes back to the question that got asked about what do I miss most about ECU? Like, and it was something that I made sure I made clear to the folks here at Tulane when I was interviewing for the job. And I made it clear to Travis when I sat down with him. It's, I want to get to know your guys as people and not as players. And I got to know so many of those guys at ECU as people. And so I can't wait to see these guys. Now, when the game starts, I hope Tulane takes all three. There's no question about it. Tulane needs this series, just like ECU needs this series. But, you know, once competition's over, like, it's the people. Like, it's the people that I care about. I asked Travis about this today because Travis and Cliff do butt heads a lot when games are going on. But off the field, these two talk a lot, and they're good friends. And he said, once the game starts, competition's competition. I want to win. And Cliff's the same exact way. But once competition's over, you care about the people. And that's how I feel heading into this weekend. And I think those guys on the other side would completely understand that. I had heard Zach Agnos was on with Cliff a few days ago. And I think he was being encouraged to like point to my booth this weekend when he does something good and all that stuff. And yeah, there's going to be maybe that little element involved here, but when push comes to shove, I care about those guys. I care about them as who they are as people, and not just as players.
This is a broadcasting nerd question to you. As far as the broadcast is concerned, have you kept similar elements like movie lines, that sort of thing, like we had in Greenville?
I haven't done the movie lines. I have tried to keep the shout outs going a little bit. Sometimes I'll forget. I do ask people to kind of say hi to the broadcast on social media. But the movie lines that got retired. I did weeks ago. I forget when ECU was doing that traveling series with North Carolina. When Spencer Brickhouse did one of the games on the radio, he did reach out to me for lines. And so like he kept it going on that side of things. I have not kept that going here. That was something that was, again, that was a Josh Graham idea and took and ran with it. And then you guys took it and ran with it. And the fans really loved it. The team really loved it. Wasn't going to force that into here. If it's going to happen organically, it was going to happen organically. But I still ask people to say hi to the broadcast on Twitter at Corey Glore. Hello.
No question. I thought somebody had the next question. Bubba, do you have another question?
I thought Matt started to chime in earlier. I accidentally stepped on Matt, but
it's all right, Bubba. No problem. No, I was just going to ask Corey. I mean, you know, Corey, when you look at ECU this season, they obviously got off to the slow start, had quite a few heartbreaking losses, you know, throughout the earlier portion of the season. And, you know, here we are, it's, you know, roughly April 20th and, you know, Cliff's got this team heading into the right direction. Don't you just get the sense that if ECU is able to go into Tulane this weekend and take this series, this is going to be a very dangerous team as we move forward here?
I think that's probably fair to say. Nobody on this side of things here in New Orleans is surprised to see that ECU has figured it out. Like, and that's how I've characterized the last 2 weeks for that program, is they figured it out. They were dealt a significant blow in the opening week of the year. And to have that happen then, right at the start of the season, and not know what to do about it, I think it showed. Like it showed, and there was a lingering effect from that. What surprised me early on was not necessarily the struggles on the mound, because when you lose the preseason conference pitcher of the year, who's, you know, theoretically is a first round draft pick, we'll see what the future holds for Carson now, but when you lose him, you can't replace that. Like, there's no replacing that. And you could tell that they were struggling to replace that. what got me was the struggles offensively early on in the year. That one was hard to put your finger on. And now they aren't struggling offensively. Like they're playing pirate offense. They are getting runners on. They're moving them order. They're moving them over. They are playing the small ball type of game, and then have the pop just at the ready to go. They'll slice and dice you when they get on base. They will just find a way to grind you down offensively. And that wasn't there in the first month of the season. They've gotten back to that. And I don't know what the catalyst was for that. But, you know, I remember talking to Travis Jewett after the first weekend and ECU lost to Bryant. And Travis said emphatically, he's going to figure it out. Like, he's going to figure it out. He's too good and they're too good. And they figured it out. And so, you know, no time like the present to figure it out, because now with the 5-game streak that they're on, they're back in the at-large picture. Certainly a conference regular season title is on the line. You know, it's going to be tricky right now in this league with how down the league is to get at most 2 bids. And it's not just a, you know, conference championship position that's on the line this weekend, but you got the 2 teams vying for at-large berths right now in this league meeting this weekend. So there's more at play than just winning a regular season championship. But if ECU walks out of here with a series win, I'm not going to write off the league just yet, because I still trust what we have here in New Orleans, but it certainly, I think, would state like, oh yeah, we're still here for the rest of the league.
That's an excellent point, Corey. As far as the RPI situation, Tulane, as it stands right now, I know going into yesterday's game with Southern Miss, who's obviously ranked 6th in the D1 baseball poll, I think they were somewhere in that range RPI-wise. But
they were 14 in RPI heading into the game, Southern Miss was.
Okay. So prior to that, you know, the Green Wave was 50th, and however that impacted things, even though Tulane lost that game, and then East Carolina was 55th prior to their victory over UNC Wilmington, which was like 114 or 115. So, you know, point being that, you know, with the exception of the game at NC State, these 3 games this weekend are the top 3 RPI games remaining on the East Carolina schedule. And, I'm not sure as far as Tulane's concerned, but I know I'm sure it'd have to be right there as well, because these 2 teams are clearly the top 2 in the American in terms of RPI. Yeah. And then you have Houston, it's like in the mid 80s.
Yeah, it's, and you guys haven't seen Houston yet, but they were, and ECU didn't see Houston last year, but that's a dramatically different team from the team that was really just, frankly, pathetic last year. That lineup is really hard to work through, and Tulane couldn't really work through it. In terms of Tulane's schedule, I mean, the game last night against Southern Miss, that was the big one. That was the big chance they had to really boost things, and they couldn't pull it off. And now you have ECU coming in, and it's hard to put must win on it right now, but it's close, I think, for Tulane, not just for conference championship, but for resume purposes. Because now, right now, Tulane doesn't have that win. Their best wins are over Louisiana Tech, and they're 30th. They're, you know, in the 30s or low 40s in the RPI right now. Tulane goes to South Alabama this Tuesday. They have 2 games with USA, and that's a team in kind of dancing around the same RPI range as Tulane and East Carolina are. And so those are the best chances remaining here for Tulane to make their case. If you're not inside, you know, 45 of the RPI, you are not on the at-large picture. Like, it's, and so these 2 teams are, I think they're on the wrong side of the bubble right now. And so that's what makes this weekend even more crucial. And the next 2 weeks here for Tulane, starting last night, then this weekend, then on the road at USA, and then going to UCF next weekend. These 8 games, I think, will tell the tale for Tulane here. Not necessarily for a conference title, because there are plenty of weekends to go there, but for potential at-large, in case you can't win Clearwater, Tulane, I think, needs to have their best 2 weeks of the year here.
And same thing, Bubba, you know, we were talking to Matt, we were talking about that, Corey, the last couple weeks for the Pirates, not looking ahead, but you have a big game. The Pirates won last night. Then you have the Tulane series on the road. Then you come back to Greenville, have the on the road at NC State, the RPI there. Then you have Cincinnati coming in next weekend to Clark LeClair. So you're right for both teams. Mm-hmm. For this weekend, next week is huge for the Green Wave and the Pirates.
Yeah, and it's I'm kind of glad that I think this series is happening right in the middle of conference season, because then it will put a sprint to the finish on for these two, however this weekend goes. Now, if one team sweeps the other, then things start to look different. Certainly if ECU grabs three here, which I would be shocked at, not doubting the quality of ECU, but just that it's hard to do that, even though they just did in Orlando. You know, that would make, you know, a 4-game lead with 4 weeks to go, and that's hard to jump over. But if the sprint to the finish here is going to be, I think, pretty fun to watch. It usually is in the league, but now, because unfortunately the league isn't nearly as strong as it has been, there's so much more on the line now for the top two teams in this conference. And so, we'll see. And this time next week, we're going to have a slightly clearer picture, I think, of who stands above whom and what's on the line. But there's no question that this weekend, the season's kind of built to this weekend for both of these teams.
A couple more things about this series before we spend a little time talking some other topics, including Tulane football, as well as maybe some professional sports. But one thing in the recent weeks and with East Carolina's pitching situation, you've seen TBA, especially in that Sunday game. I'm sure that may be the case again. You've had Jake Hunter pitch well, Josh Groves pitch well. And then last weekend, you only had four pitchers used in the first two games, which was very unusual for this season. But, you know, from a defensive standpoint, the Pirates, I haven't looked it up in the last several days, but I know 983 is the fielding percentage. It probably ranks top 10 or top 15 nationally, if I had to guess. I think Tulane's, what, 972?
Yeah, it's about there. Yeah, it was 972 heading into yesterday.
So, obviously, that's not a bad fielding percentage. You want to be at least, you know, right around 970, you know, mid-970s. So, you know, tell us about the team defensively outside of just simply the fielding percentage.
Yeah, it's it can be philanthropic at times. That's a Travis Jewett term he used for with me last week, in that they can be giving. The last night against Southern Miss, you know, there was one inning in which suddenly things were just going wayward defensively, and I think only one error was charged, but it's misplays, misreads. I don't think it's as strong as Travis would like it to be by this point. And so, like, it's there are moments in which gifts are kind of given by the Tulane defense, and that's been a real sore spot here at times this year. You know, Trevor Minder at short is exceptionally talented, has a really slick glove. There are times in which the infield can kind of almost look a little too casual trying to field a baseball. And so that's, frankly, when I was at practice today, that was the main point of focus, was that and staying locked in. So, you know, ECU does come in with a defensive edge right now, but it's, you know, Jared Hart in center covers a ton of ground. There's very little that's not in his orbit, and he covers up a lot of potential holes in the corners. But there are certainly moments in which Tulane will spring a leak on you.
Corey, you bring up a great point of that very thing. It doesn't matter what team, what sport. It takes one play, you can lose focus. Look at the football team while you were here right before you were here, I guess, with Scotty Montgomery. They would lose their focus on play after play after play. not so much in baseball, but it only takes one play. It might be, you know, with this, these two teams are pretty even, it seems like, and they're both fighting for a championship. It may take one play to decide the championship, I'm sorry, the series for this weekend. And that's how close I think these two teams are, don't you?
Yeah, and every game, 10-0, 1-0. Every game comes down to 5 or 6 pitches, like every single one of them. What was put in play, how it was put in play, what was the result, all of that. You can find 5 or 6 pitches that will determine the outcome of a game. And so if you're not attentive for those, you know, for 3 of those 5, you're going to lose. Like, it's, that's how fickle the sport is. You have to stay locked in for 300 some odd pitches thrown over the course of an evening. And that's challenging to do, and no question. So yeah, it doesn't matter how good or bad you are. You can find just a handful of pitches and that will tell the tale of an outcome.
Or shifting gears to football, obviously Willie Fritz has done a tremendous job there at Tulane. He steadily built the program, 4 wins, 5 wins, 7 wins, 7 wins, 6 wins, 3 consecutive bowl games, you know, doing unprecedented things. Then last year out of nowhere, and I know there were certainly competitive losses, such as the season opener where the Green Wave rallied from a large deficit at Oklahoma before falling to the Sooners. Just talk about how surprising that 2-10 campaign was, because I would have certainly lost a lot of money.
Yeah, it's, I caught up with Willie last week because our spring game was this past Saturday. And so I chatted with him about just what he was looking for. And I think it's still a little bit of a shock to him what happened last season. And now, I mean, he didn't sit back and not do anything. Almost the entire offensive coaching staff is new here now. And a good, say, third to half of the defensive side of the ball is new. Like, I mean, there were some sweeping changes after last year on the coaching staff. And what was impressive, and this is something he and I talked about, was that despite a 2-10 year, they didn't lose a ton of people in terms of transfer portal. They certainly lost graduation seniors, but, you know, only one guy that was a real every down impactful player jumped in the transfer portal. That was Jeffrey Johnson, the nose tackle, and he transferred to Oklahoma. And so, like, you understood why he made that leap. But everyone else stuck around, and the recruiting class stayed intact even after that year. And so it speaks to what you were alluding to, Bubba, of what he was been able to construct here and still be able to sell and keep the vision intact after a year that was as sideways as last year was. He hasn't ever had a year like that in his time coaching Division I football. And so, you know, I think it's what happened this year was when changes needed to be made in the coaching staff, he took his time with it. And he went through some thorough interview processes to find the guys that he felt were right. And just being around some of those practices in the spring, again, we're talking about spring. We're not talking about August yet here, but there was a noticeable difference in mood, in tone, in just enjoyment that those players were having, just being around each other. And so it felt very different. Now, we'll, you know, August and September will come, and that will dictate, you know, the actual course of whether this is a success or not here heading into 2022 fall. But I can tell you that it was very, very made aware, and Willie was very clear that a 2-10 year should never happen like it did here ever again. And the fact that it did meant that things needed to change.
Tell us about that new offensive coordinator. That's a very intriguing hire. A head coach from a lower division, a guy that had significant head coaching experience.
Yeah, Jim Sobota is the new offensive coordinator. He was at Central Missouri in Division II and led some pretty high-powered offenses there. They averaged 40-45 points a game over his last 3 or 4 years there. He took over for Willie Fritz at that school. Willie went to Georgia Southern, left Central Missouri, and Sobota took over. And so they've known each other for a while. In fact, one of the team's best receivers from last year, Shea Wyatt, transferred from Central Missouri. And part of what led to that is Sobota called up Fritz and said, I got a receiver. He's looking to go D1. He's getting a few looks here. I want him to go to you. Do you want him? And Willie said, sure. And he was one of the more shorthanded receivers that Tulane had last year. And now he gets to reunite with his head coach. And he's been all smiles here in spring ball. So it's a relationship-driven business. There's no question about it. But the product that Sobota put out offensively in his time at Central Missouri, certainly you're hoping translates to D1. That's the big question. Can D2 go to D1 like that? But I know that there is certainly a lot of excitement surrounding the guys on the offensive side of the ball about what he's already been able to install there.
He certainly has a tremendous signal caller with which to work.
Oh, Michael Pratt, you mean? I tell you, he has been all smiles here in spring ball. So it's, yeah, I mean, he got knocked around a lot last year, and he called last year pretty dang humbling for him. And so I think he's rejuvenated now heading in with a new coaching staff. He brought in, he was able to bring in an old high school teammate of his at receiver, Day-Day McDougal, transfers in from Maryland. Just talking to him a few weeks ago, he is as happy as can be right now. He says, he admitted to me last year, he just like, there are times I wake up and I didn't want to come to practice because of the year that he was having, the year they were having, and now he's having fun again. And so it's just been a very different vibe around that team here in spring, and that's been great to see.
And Corey, with a 2-10 year that was, like Bubba was saying, so odd, what do you we hear about the coaching changes, but what went wrong last year?
Boy, what didn't? I think now that they've kind of had some time and Willie's had some time to decompress from that, they didn't try to use it as an excuse as the year went on, but it's hard to not look at the first 3 weeks of the season and living in a hotel in Birmingham as opposed to playing home to Oklahoma and home to Morgan State due to a hurricane. And I mean, that was such a, it was somehow he held that program together through that stint. But that last game of that journey was at Ole Miss. And that was a horror show. Like that game kind of felt like the start of it all, where a ton of injuries happened in that game. They bust over from Birmingham. There was a 2-hour delay for a night game already, so they didn't get back to Birmingham until 4:00 in the morning. And then they drove back to New Orleans early that morning. And so it's that was kind of the catalyst for it all. And then once that happened, it just started this domino effect of, all right, injury here, injury here, you know, lack of focus here. And then just we're not playing well at all right now, and it's time to end the season. So it's hard to put your finger on just one game, certainly, but I would just say that those 3 weeks displaced due to the hurricane took a ton out of this program. And I think now that this team has been removed from that for a while, I think they've realized now just how impactful that was on them.
Corey, is this Pratt's final year of eligibility? Because similar to Holt Naylor's, it seems like he's been there for at least 10 years. Is this his final year?
This is his third year of eligibility here, because he was a COVID freshman last year. He was listed as a freshman on the roster. So he's got more under his belt if he wants him here. But this is year three coming up for Michael.
So, Matt, you, if he should choose to use all of his eligibility – there at Tulane, we can see him this year and two more.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. He seems like he's one of those guys. He's just been there forever. And, you know, you're starting to get that. It seems like Holton's been here in Greenville for
for quite a while too with the Pirates. But Corey, I wanted to ask you, when you take a look at East Carolina now, Mike Houston heading into year four, you know, he's always wanted to run the football, and his first few years here, it was a real struggle. He slowly built up that offensive line to get to a point where, you know, we had a 1,000-yard rusher last year. You know, what are your thoughts on East Carolina as you look at the program sort of from the outside looking in now, and, you know, Mike Houston heading into year four, and like I just mentioned, Holton Ahlers now, you know, the veteran who has many years of starting experience under his belt. How do you see things shaping up for the Pirates next year?
They took a needed step forward last year. Like, I think that was, you know, third year for Mike, and having Holton there is just kind of, you know, he's been around for a long time now with that program. That was a year that was needed there. And so to see them actually accomplish that was big. And so now you have something to build off of and success to build off of there. And that means you can shore up the weaknesses that, you know, last year's team had, and, you know, figure out your wide receiver situation now, which is seems dicey from what I've seen in the offseason here. And but you have now a coach that has shown, like, all right, this is what I'm putting together, and we can win games off of it now. And then you have a quarterback who says, I'm sticking around for one more go at this here. And it's the right call for Holton to do that. I know there's certainly some buzz around him about potentially being a pro quarterback. I think he needed another year to figure out just how to pull that off. And so that is good for East Carolina to do that. It's the key now is sustaining that and sustaining it past this year, because the conference is going to look very different in 2 years. And if East Carolina can continue just kind of stepping up here, what, one step at a time, then when Houston leaves, when Cincinnati leaves, you know, when UCF leaves, even though they were, you know, slightly down for what they think they should be this past year, then that East Carolina can position itself in a pretty good spot here in the new look American. And so it was a needed stepping stone year for that program to get some wins, to get a postseason berth, I guess, even though they didn't play that game, and convince, I think, the fan base there, we're doing something that can work. Now let's really support it.
Even though Boston College, to put it politely, kind of chickened out of that bowl game, but we won't mention that, fellas. We won't go down that road.
No question about it. You know, I'll behave. I promise. Corey's a great friend. I won't put him on the spot or cause any kind of trouble, or especially with friends in Greenville. But Corey, seriously, with we talking about with Mike Houston, the irony of 2020, that season, is if you're a coach like Houston, you're building a program. Man, you have Holton another year. You have potentially Mason Garcia has, I think, at least 3 years. The coaching staff is trying to figure that all out, especially if he doesn't play the more than four games this year. So you have a situation where you have with Holton Ahlers another year, the potential bowl season on the line this year. You have Mason Garcia. Finally, I think, is starting to get his footing as far as the not only playbook, but also it's hard. Those of us that were not academically the best when it comes to, I guess, structure, shall we say, he's a smart kid. He's starting to turn the corner there. I think he's starting to turn the corner, learning the playbook. So you got a guy that a Mason Garcia didn't have to come into this program, even with the talent that he has to, he now knows the program. So by the time he's actually a starter, potentially next year, he will really be in good shape. And I think that's Coach Houston. That's the one area, the one to me that was, you know, like, what? How would that be play out for us, Ahlers and Garcia? But it's actually worked out to the ECU's favor.
You have to sell kids on your message. Like, that's everything in college sports. And so it sounds like things are trending in the correct direction there with Mike Houston and a guy like Mason Garcia, who is lying in wait here, even when maybe he thought maybe this year he was going to become the starting guy, and now he has to wait another bit. Keeping that message consistent to college kids is everything now. And so, you know, it seems like that's heading in the correct direction right now with Mike Houston.
Corey, shifting gears onto professional sports, obviously being in the market that you are, I know you said you have not had the chance to attend a Saints game yet, but just talk about, you know, some of the things that you've had the opportunity to experience. I saw on social media here in just the last few days, Graf talking about, you know, 30 years in the making, him getting the call of Pelicans playoff game.
Yeah, and he called a win last night too. And so they're back home this weekend. I was trying to get out to Sunday night's game, but tickets are now way too pricey after they won last night. And so I'm probably going to have to pass on that. Been to a few Pelicans games. I was at the national championship game back at the first Monday of April, I guess. And so that was a fun experience to be in the Superdome for that game. Was kind of a pinchy sort of moment there. But that's and then the New Orleans Bowl. Yeah, I've been to that. But outside of that, Tulane keeps me plenty busy with the sports that I'm in charge of. But it's this town right now has really caught basketball fever, and to see the Pelicans doing what they're doing now, I mean, and frankly, this town latched on to Tulane basketball this year, and that was great to see with the year that they had. And so now that this city, which has been, I think, maligned around the country about their supposed lack of support for an NBA team, well, they've needed something to care about, and now they have a team that is worth caring about, that's really fun to watch and really young. And so, and they're doing this without Zion Williamson. So if he returns in any semblance of good form, then this franchise is ready to, I think, level up here, because what they're doing now, they started 1-12, and what they're doing now, they just grabbed a game off of the team with the best record in the league. And now we're coming back home for two. So, this city has really taken to that team, and that has been kind of fun to tangentially be a part of here. I have my fandom. They're playing right now. They've started horribly. And so I've already turned the game off, but, I hope that, it's fun to be in a city where a team is like a pro team is playing well and is part of something big. And so that's been fun to kind of be around here as well.
Now, Matt, Corey, very quickly, I had a follow-up. Now, Corey, you talk about being able to take in that title game between Kansas and North Carolina, and Kansas being able to obviously produce the largest second-half comeback in title game history. But were you able to watch the Saturday semifinal games?
No, we were in Memphis for baseball. I caught some of Kansas Villanova. I caught the end of that game, and then I caught bits and pieces of Carolina Duke. I was actually the studio host that we have for our network, who's based in Winston-Salem, where I started working when IMG existed. He was driving home to Los Angeles, and he stopped in Memphis for the night, and so he grabbed dinner, and so we caught a little bit of Duke and Carolina, caught the finish. But I wasn't able to watch the kind of the slugfest that was.
Corey, you know, the name Zion Williamson came up a little bit earlier here. You know, when you look at him, he's as talented a player as I've seen come into the league in many, many years. I mean, his physical gifts are, you know, once in a generation type talents. You know, obviously the injuries have sort of derailed his career here. How do you see this playing out for Zion? Do you think he's a guy that's going to kind of live up to his potential and that status of being the first draft pick, the first pick in the NBA draft?
I don't know if I have a great answer to that, Matt, to be honest. I mean, I think we haven't seen enough of him to fully know. I think The biggest question around here has not necessarily been that. It's, you know, everywhere outside of here is talking about how Zion wants out. And frankly, that hasn't been the messaging that a lot of people in the city have been hearing. And so it's, I think, you know, they're not too far removed from the Anthony Davis split and how acrimonious that was here. And so what I found very quickly when I moved here is if you love this city, it'll love you back. Like, and it's very prideful in that way. And I think, you know, Zion over the last probably about 5-6 weeks or so is actually starting to show a little bit more outward love to the city. And they're starting to respond back in kind. So I think, you know, whether he turns into the otherworldly talent that, you know, kind of thought that he might be coming out of Duke, that I don't know. It all depends on how he stays healthy. But the biggest question here is, can he become that transcendent guy for a franchise that's ready to, and a city that's ready to embrace him for it?
Corey, one thing that I told Matt is if you take, two things real quickly, Matt. If you combine the Knicks and the Hornets, maybe we would have a good team. I don't know if it's good enough to win a championship, but he's a big Knicks fan, and I'm a big Hornets fan. So if you have, like, some kind of contraction where you can make one team, maybe, just maybe, we could get deep into the playoffs. I wouldn't say the finals or an NBA championship, but something's got to give here for both teams.
Something definitely has to give at some point. You know, being a Knicks fan is a brutal existence. And, you know, guys, every day in the New York media, there's some new story about Zion coming to the Knicks, you know, to team up with RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish now. So you know, those rumors, they're constantly floating out there. I'd certainly love to see him with the Knicks, but you never know how, like, you know, like you said earlier, Corey, you just never know how these things are going to play out. And but it certainly would be interesting to see him back, you know, with that core from Duke, and to see how him and RJ could do together in the NBA. But we shall see.
Nobody wants to go to the Knicks, Matt. Sorry. Nobody wants to go to the Knicks.
Oh, come on now.
No. You know you need to go, Corey, but I was going to make a quick point, and that is, not that I'm an NBA fan. However, I said this year when they had the trade with Anthony Davis with the Lakers and all the players, the Pelicans got the better end of the deal. You want to talk about, hey, Matt, you want to talk about fan and be miserable? Try being a Lakers fan right now. How good do you think they feel? They didn't even make a play-in tournament. They didn't make playoffs, anything. And we know how much they love basketball there in L.A. And very sad for them that
I couldn't be happier, Dave. I have no love for the Lakers. I have no love for Hollywood. I have no love for LeBron James. Great, I mean, player, but I'm happy to see them out of the playoffs. But
a tough 1-2 punch for Lakers fans to also see Duke lose in the Final Four. That had to hurt.
There you go. Corey, do you have anything before we go? I know you're working hard tonight, the midnight oil, so to speak.
Yeah, I got to do what you guys are doing here tonight. I got to put my own podcast together here for Tulane Athletics. It comes out tomorrow morning. You'll hear from Travis Jewett and Jackson Lynn. So that is a shameless promotion. I've never done that here on this show. This weekend, I've certainly been looking forward to this weekend ever since I knew when it would be on the calendar, and even before then when I got this job. I am excited to see some old friends again. I'm excited to call some really good baseball, hopefully, this weekend. We'll see. I don't know if I can really put a, you know, pin on what my emotions might be this weekend, but this is going to be special, and I hope the games are fun. I hope the games are good. I certainly hope for some olive and blue wins this time around instead of some purple and gold wins. I've heard from some fans already heading into the week. I've heard from some people already as the season has gone on, and if you want to join me this weekend along the airwaves, you know where to find me by this point. I think it's pretty well indoctrinated into that fan base where you can find me on Twitter. But I hope this will be as fun as I think it will be, because I've been looking forward to this weekend for a long time.
No doubt. Corey, thank you so much for your time, man. And good luck to you guys the rest of the season, the rest of the way. Thanks for all the extended time tonight. And we'll talk to you again, hopefully very soon, maybe sometime this summer.
Yeah. Well, we can just talk about life, talk about just the world. That'd be fun. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for doing this. Let's have some fun this weekend. All right.
All right.
Thanks, take Corey. Care, take care.
Thanks, Corey.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. Appreciate Corey Glory, director for Tulane Broadcasting. Guys, great show as always. He is so much fun. One of the best guests we've ever had in the over 4 years being on the show. Do you guys have any final thoughts before we go?
You know, I just can't help but think of how exciting this must be for Corey to be able to be in this position this weekend, to call these games with obviously his new team, Tulane, versus his old team, ECU. It's got to be exciting. And, you know, I'm looking forward to listening.
Yeah, it's going to be a heck of a series. I'm really looking forward to this one. So big in so many ways, both from a RPI standpoint and then also, obviously, the league standings, that goes without saying. But be sure to join us on Sunday for Extra Innings. And, you know, we'll have a look back at the week that was, including the victory over UNC Wilmington. Pirates taking down the Seahawks 8-2 on Tuesday night, playing very well in all facets of the game. And you had some excellent performances at the plate and also on the mound. But then also be sure to get your football season tickets, 1-800-ECU, or simply go online at ecupirates.com. I'm sure we're probably over 12,000 now. Who knows, maybe over 13,000. But as of probably a week and a half ago, we were just shy of 12,000. The goal internally there within ECU Athletics is 15,000. But I think we can do better than that. So let's get up there close to that 18,000 mark. And then also, you know, be sure to join the Pirates Cove on Facebook. That is where the Pirate Nation talks East Carolina Athletics, on Facebook. Simply, you know, search the Pirates Cove and, you know, join today, as we're right there around 1,000 members.
No doubt. A lot of people are joining left and right, Bubba. And by the way, guys, we have Alexander wanting to make a cameo. So Alex is here with us real quick. You want to say hey to everybody?
Hey.
All right. He's playing baseball right now, guys, doing well. Thanks to Trent Britt and Gaynell Britt for all they do for at Next Level, our sponsor for Extra Innings. Wanted to do that. And Bubba, one more thing. We have a big concert coming up on Saturday, May the 7th. Mother's Day with the King. We have Elvis tribute artist Wayne Euless nearby Robertsonville, home of Marcus Crandall. And that's where we're going to have that. Tickets are on sale now, and they're going fast, folks. Hey, Bubba, the last couple of days, we've sold a lot of tickets. So just go to innovativeticketing.com and just search Mother's Day with the King. And you can find, if you're friends with me on Facebook, we have a lot of, we'll put it up on there on the Pirates Cove as well, if you're interested. And tickets, it's Alexander, his first concert. He'll be able to go there. He and Mackenzie will be with me that night. So a lot of fun. Guys, it's been a real pleasure. Can you say bye, Alex?
Bye.
You're supposed to say bye, Alex.
What's up, Al?
Hey, what's up? But anyway, he wanted to say, hey, get on the show. And thank you guys so much for listening and watching. You've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. And as always, go Pirates.
My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul, and I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode, from the sidelines down to the post.